What, you dare me
what,
to make
you,
it about
dare
feminism?
Me to make it about feminism?
I can make it about
because
feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
You are now listening you to the Feminist Bar Podcast. The Feminist Bar Podcast.
What is good? What is popping? Welcome to the Feminist Bar Podcast with your host, Tina. And welcome to today's episode. I'm with one of my favorite guests. Guest, do you want to introduce yourself?
Okay. My name is Ruten Dochabikwa. I am currently attempting to be a PhD student at the University of Oxford Internet Institute. Outside that, I do gender technology research, gender and feminist AI policy work, feminist citizenship as well, which is actually my actual academic research. And yeah, that's it to my professional introduction.
What are some of your hobbies, Ritendo?
Oh, awesome.
Okay, what do you like to do?
Hobbies, weightlifting. Playing guitar. I also love to write. It's not a hobby. It's actually, I think, something I want to do properly, but I write a lot of fiction and kind of got into creative fiction, apparently. Shout out to Percy. I think that's what I do.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing. You know, like lately I've kind of been like doing a lot of thinking about like professionalism, which I think I've already spoken a lot about on the podcast, but more on my like personal episodes. But sometimes like I'll find myself like falling back into that, like, oh my god, like I have to be like so professional. Then I have to come back to remind myself that, you know, professionalism is a colonial construct. And yeah, especially like on TikTok and shit, like when you're just like doing things where like other people could see you. So yeah, that's why I then asked you, what are your hobbies? Because you introduced yourself and you only introduced the professional you.
Absolutely. And I think it's this thing where it's very colonial to deny us our entire selves, right? In whatever spaces we are. Because we bring all of ourselves truly into whatever space we're in. And yet, anyway, we'll go into that later.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you to everybody who's listening, everybody who's tuned in. Today we're bringing you an episode about feminist movement building and academia. Probably briefly only spoken about this. Maybe a couple of guests have slightly touched on it. I think you are the person who's spoken about it the most on this podcast, because last time you were here, we were talking about being Black and queer in anywhere, like in any space, and you spoke a lot about academia. And I've been just doing a lot of thinking myself ever since starting my master's degree. You know, I've had so many holy shit moments where I'm sitting in class and we're learning about something and someone says something that is so jarring that I wonder, like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, and a little bit of context for my own, like, personal, like, academic life is, I am a Masters of Law student at the Center for Human Rights, and it is a class that only has 15 students. So they only pick 15 students across Africa every 2 years. And they pick someone who would say, like, oh, like, disabled people, like, shouldn't be allowed to have babies. Do you know what I mean? In my head, I'm just like, oh, like, what the fuck is going on here? And it just brings up a lot of questions, because, you know, how many times have you been around people who you've been told are really smart, and then you hear them talking and you're like, damn, you had me in the first half. So that has got me thinking a lot lately about the role that academia can play in feminist movement building. So I guess also then having like one foot like deep within like the actual community organizing and activism and one foot in this academic world, I'm like, okay, there's something to unpack here. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Like, how are you feeling about this topic?
Feeling good. I actually like it, because as someone in academia, I spend a lot of time not just doing like academia, but also thinking about it, because I don't believe that I truly am what academia wants me to be. I think more about the real world. So this is really great to be here.
Yeah, damn, that's true. I feel that. Like, yo, they want us to be something we're not. And you know what? I don't want to get into, like, the conspiracies around, like, how academics are even, like, selected. You know what? We'll get into that at the end. So let's just get into it. So when we're talking about, like, feminist movement building, we're talking about strengthening the movement of the ideology that is feminism. We're talking about community organizing. We are talking about speaking with one voice, having, you know, similar and shared goals and visions, and even where we don't, kind of still extending that, like, feminist solidarity. And feminist movement building is, you know, a huge foundation of a lot of the stuff that different people are working in. And kind of, like, without the movement building, a lot of it is just never going to work out, right? Because we need to come together. There needs to be some kind of unity among us. So what is the role of academia in our feminist movement building to begin with?
I think I'm going to say there's two things, two ways I think I can think about this, at least right now, trying to obviously keep this brief. And I think the first role academia has is one in naming and categorizing things, in the sense that literally as academics, our job,
so real,
continue thinking is to think. But hopefully the best of us think in relation to the real world that's out there. But to name, categorize, and sort of show how things are, right? So if we think about African feminisms right now, because there's sort of the discussion that African feminism is not a singular thing, there's multiple feminisms, and so we need to think about African feminisms. But I think academia's role is actually to this day, to kind of be like, okay, what do we mean when we say African feminisms? Where does it come from? Where do we see it? How does it work? The reason naming, categorizing, pointing, highlighting things is important is because it sort of gives a roadmap, but also those of us that are doing the work on the actual ground, something to grasp and sort of point to. And I think that's important work. I know we're going to talk about the disadvantages or, like, the cons of academia. So I will definitely get into the cons of these at some point. And then I think the second thing, academia's role in movement building is to really show the interconnectedness of multiple things.
Which
means I'm not saying this as an academia should do it by itself. I'm saying this as a role that academia should play with every single other person. We're talking professionals, policymakers, activists, community members. Academia's role is to show the interconnectedness of things, because I think those of us that are actually acting and working towards change, you know, are doing a lot of work, and sometimes it might be difficult to sort of see what we're plugging into. And I think academia's role is to interconnectedness of things. So naming, categorizing, and also showing the interconnectedness of things is important. And I think that's academia's role. But I also think academia's role is to speak to other facets. And that's how it shows interconnectedness. So if I, as a feminist academic, I think my work should not just be about this one thing, but to show how this fits into things such as, let's say, climate justice, people with disabilities rights, all of that. Yeah. That
100%.
So
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because I think, and you know, this is not to take, like, credit or autonomy or capacity away from anyone, but I think sometimes the fact that even when you're going into communities and people, you know the stuff that they're going through, and they can explain to you themselves the stuff that they're going through, sometimes they don't really understand how it might be connected to other things, right? So, you know, going maybe to, like, rural, remote African country and talking to people about climate change and using that particular language and, you know, trying to explain gender equality and climate change and, you know, the, like, social capacity and, like, adaptability and stuff like that. Someone might then ask you, you know, what does the fact, you know, that I am, you know, suffering in poverty have to do maybe, for example, with climate change? And it is then kind of, I think academia does a really good job of sometimes like taking that step back, right? And then just trying to like, you know, when you show the broader picture to people, to be like, well, actually this might be connected to this and this might be connected to this, and having people kind of understand those things. I think sometimes there's a little bit of difficulty because even the people who are going into the field, the people who work the closest with communities, a lot of those people don't have university degrees. A lot of those people don't have master's degrees, don't have PhDs. So I think to an extent, even they struggle to sometimes explain those things. And then academics who end up in those communities don't do a great job of relaying that information. So I think, like what you're saying, like there's a good like skill of naming and categorizing and connecting, and maybe like not so much of then translating like that information, but I guess we're going to kind of get to that. Something else that I was thinking was about policymaking spaces. I was actually having a conversation with my professor, and he is someone who also runs a nonprofit organization. So he runs a nonprofit organization in Malawi that focuses on like child sexual crimes and like adolescent sexuality. And I was asking him, because he's so like, he just doesn't seem like someone who would be an academic. And I was like to him, yo, like, how did you kind of like end up here? And like, what does this mean to you? Because you also like make it sound like the field is kind of like where your heart is set on fire. Do you know what I mean? And like, here you are and you're lecturing. And he was like, honestly, like getting into academia for me was a way for to like get people to finally like listen. Do you know what I mean? And like, how fucked up is that? That academia and of course like other policymaking spaces, but like academia can literally carry you into a space where people will finally listen to what you're saying. Even if you are someone who's having a certain lived experience, you might have less people listen to you until you like, you know, get yourself a master's, get yourself a degree. So, and you know, he just kind of started talking about like how being able to put things to the paper, the experiences that they were seeing and the experiences that they were working with, being able to put those on paper and use the language that people in those spaces, I guess, want, which is this flowery, complicated language, and be able to like talk about it and back it up, was the thing that allowed him to get into those spaces. And even though there's kind of like a lot of pretense and a lot of stuff, he was like, I got there. Do you know what I mean? Like someone was listening and we're talking about legislation, we're talking about new policies. And even though, you know, sometimes you have to cosplay this really like fucking stuck up white people, it's like, this is what's getting me to this space. And sometimes that's kind of beneficial to our movement. So I think academia also like plays a large role in kind of like carrying our stories, I guess, to those spaces where like historically, and even like now presently, we're like excluded.
When done correctly, right? And I think that's just because academia can do something doesn't mean it actually is. And I think a lot of
real
actually, you know, and so when done correctly, and I think that's where a lot of academics fall short. I mean, I was at a conference literally a couple of days ago in South Africa, and it was an African regional conference, and my expectation was that, look, we are starting from the same basis of understanding. We know what decentering the West means, because I think that was actually the theme. We know, we understanding the complexity of decolonization, we're great. Mm-hmm. No, we're not. I was in this space where, you know, I get to the conference and it's academics and people are still asking, like, what is the point of decentering the West? Mind you, these actually weren't African academics. And I think that's the other thing as well about academia. So when we say academia has a role in XYZ, we need to be clear about who in academia has that role, who in academia actually can probably do it right, can probably take academia and turn it on its head to use a curriculum. Because what I'm saying is not, oh, let us get the white professor to come and talk about, you know, queer lives in Zimbabwe, you know, the white, I'm sorry, why you,
right?
And so I think that, that's definitely one of those things that, yes, you're right. Like, academia can put people in these spaces, can put those voices, can, you know, but it also matters who is doing it and how it is being done. It's not just academia that actually makes it work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I think there's so much potential, right? Because in academia, you kind of learn all of these different like historical contexts, which I think are really important, like within our movement building. And as we're kind of like coming up with new solutions to things, being like, how were things before? Right. So that being said, about like the role of academia within our feminist movement building, what are some of the limitations that we have, I guess? What are some of the limitations of academia? And I'm guessing the first one is that there's too many white people, but
the first weakness of academia is that it is academia. Okay. In the sense that,
wow, you're literally the perfect person for this conversation.
Systemically, it is academia. Like, it is an ivory tower.
Yeah.
That in itself is a major weakness. That is to say, the language, like you've already mentioned, that you're expected to speak within that space. That is to say, the ways in which you have to access that space are limited in certain structural ways. So the fact that it is academia is a limitation, right? So how you access that space, the language you have to speak in that space, the people who run that space, the ways you have to move through that space, that is a limitation already. Because even as me, who I am, what I want to do with academia, I'm fighting certain battles that are about the institution, that are about the system of academia, before I even think about getting my work to have the importance that it should have in the communities that I care about.
So
that is the first limitation. In fact, let me just say that is the entire limitation.
Yeah.
So facets of it. And one of the things you say, it is a very racialized colonial space, right? So it's limited, which is one thing that I find sad, because once again, like at the conference I was at, you know, people would ask, where are you going? And I would tell them and be like, oh my God, you made it. And I'm like, no, I didn't. In the sense that it should not be a wow. But it has been made a wow, because we know that there are certain numbers and limitations. Mm-hmm. that I'm trying to, you know, got to measure my words here. I was just lucky that the year that I applied, there was an opening for those like us or something like that.
It feels,
you know, if I'd applied the next year on the same thing, who knows, I would not have gotten in, or the year before on the very same thing.
Is
basically what I'm trying to say. So I think that is a limitation. And so that is why I think academia should work together with other facets of society, because in itself is a limited construction. I was about to diss it. And it in itself is a limited construction, and it needs to work with every single other facet of society and politics to actually achieve something.
Yeah. Yeah. I would probably say that's what I would say too, that the biggest limitation would be, and I look at this the same way that I look at like feminist political power, being that as long as we don't have feminists with political power, there's going to be very little that changes within kind of like the way that like politics happens, and in the way that our laws, our policies, like the way that women are included in things, like blah, 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 blah. And for me, it's similar in academia. If the only people who get into institutions are white, rich folk, that means even within the way that knowledge is being produced, even in the things that are being written, right, it's coming very much from that perspective, which I find very limiting, and also just kind of actually perpetuating a lot of violence. Because even, you know, academics who claim to be liberal, and I think it's mostly academics who claim to be liberal, are still like subject to their own prejudice. You know, like they still hold all of this prejudice, even in spaces where they don't even realize that they do. So I think that is a really great limitation, because I cannot imagine, well, I actually can't imagine the power of someone with a lived experience who also has a voice of their own outside of like that monotone, complicated ass words that we find in a lot of academic articles. Like, that to me is like so powerful. And yeah, I just think that breaks barriers and that breaks limitations. And anytime a Black or queer woman is let into the room, you can see how much they do with it. You know what? I don't want to use this moment to stand for all the bad bitches out there, but shout out to Bell Hooks. Shout out to Sylvia Tamale. You know,
Dylan Yanzi also doing it.
Shout out to the real ones. Because for me, that is the perfect example of, like, you know, letting African feminists, okay, not on the Bell Hooks part, but like letting, you know, people that are coming from certain marginalizations, like, into the room and giving them the power to own their story and like what that looks like. Do you know what I mean? Like, Bell Hooks, every time that I read her, it's almost like you're getting the knowledge of the academia, but the empathy and love of the person as a human being. And that to me is really powerful, because I also believe that a huge limitation of academia is the rigidness, the formalness, the very high, strange, white standards. You know what I mean? Like, just, and I think even like language, you know what I mean? Like, language is powerful. When we start using language differently, we start like speaking about things in ways that everyone can understand, that information becomes accessible to everyone, and it really, really serves its purpose. So yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's why it's important when we talk about representation, a term that I don't like to use a lot anymore, because or inclusion or things like that. And I think that's why it is important that we have more people in all of these different spaces, because they're the only ones that can truly turn something on its head. We cannot expect the same old white academics who did things the way it's been done since the 1300s. To be able to be the ones to take a step back and be like, oh, this doesn't seem like it's right, you know?
Right.
And so that's why I think it's that's the other role academia has. And by academia, I mean, that's the other role that those who've been formally excluded and marginalized have, which is to be in these spaces, be forcefully themselves as much as is possible, do the very important work, because it builds up. So my work today has been made easier because Stella Nyanzi has written something, and then Sylvia Tamale has written something. Goyomi has written something, and by the way, just a side stand, I received an email from her after I wrote her one, so you know, I don't so my work is made easier because of all these African women who have been in these spaces and have been forcefully themselves, and I'm only adding a very small brick, and it's important that we have more, but you know, but not just stay in academia, bring it out as well, which I think these people are doing. So yeah, absolutely agree.
Okay, amazing. So let's get into the last part of this episode, and let's talk about the ways that we can critically apply academia for it to, I guess, reach the full potential of transformation. Or the part that it can play in like feminist movement building.
Okay, I'm gonna be that person. There's two things that I think we can do right now, but then there's something I think we should actually be working towards.
Okay, like a third. Let's hear it.
So the two things that I think we can do right now with academia as it is, the first thing is, I'm still thinking of a better word for this. As you can see, like, academics spend a lot of time thinking of words, but I will call it inclusion, but I don't like that right now. But that is to say that I think no academic work, especially that which involves society, humans, and all of that, maybe math and physics could be different. I don't know. I don't know those disciplines. But even some natural sciences actually are included in this. I think no academic work should be done without inclusion of non-academic perspectives, but also perspectives of the community, societies.
So real. So real. Can we get a round of applause, please?
But that seems dictatorial for me to say, no, it shouldn't. But I actually think any academic work worth its salt, worth its whatever, needs, there's no way I could do so. I'll just tell people what I look at, how Zimbabwean women and queer people experience their citizenship based on state engagement on social media. That should not happen if I don't talk to them, right? Me spending time on Twitter, doing analysis on Twitter is not enough. That should not happen if I don't actually talk to the people that experience this,
right?
Period. So I think that's the first. And then the second thing is academic work shouldn't, I think the way that academia is set up, first of all, because neoliberal capitalism, but also because this institution, we have this whole publish and perish thing, which is you've got to, the only way you can be an academic and get a good job and career progression is if you publish in a lot of academic journals and high impact factor journals, etc. Great. But I actually think we need to change that and say, unless, like, you've got to publish, like, public scholarship, quote unquote, is what they call it, right?
Yeah.
I think academics should take their work outside academia. So I'm talking long form opinion articles, non-academic books, podcasts, documentaries, whatever else. I think there is no point in quote unquote creating knowledge. I'm saying quote unquote because I don't believe you're creating any knowledge, as opposed to exposing things perhaps, but I don't think it makes sense if we're just talking to each other, because then what's the point?
Right.
Also, these academic journals are actually inaccessible to even the practitioners. Right. Like, unless you you come from an institution that pays to get these articles and things like that, even policymakers can't just be downloading academic articles just like that. So what is the point? So I think those are the two things we can do right now. Now, the third thing, which I'm saying, is actually what I think is more important, but perhaps not for right now, is just abolish academia as it is.
Real. So real. You know, I'm so glad you said this, because this was the only answer that I had to this question, actually.
Yeah, I mean, because do you remember when I said the limitation of academia is that it is academia? Yeah. Therefore, the only way to make it work better is to not make it academia.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is to abolish the entire system.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is just how life is in a lot of things, right? Even with capitalism and all of that, we might think about things such as impact investing or do good, da, da, da. At the end of the day, we just need to abolish neoliberal capitalism, period. Same thing with academia. Yeah. I think it so just needs to not exist as academia.
Yeah.
It needs to exist as something else. And I know that some people exist as, guys, naming the problem is the first part of coming to the solution. So don't come for me thinking. But I do think there's multiple ways of thinking about a knowledge excavation institution that is not academic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was going to talk about, like, looking at things from the bottom up, which is kind of like what leads to, like, this, historically speaking, you know, we only had white men going, you know, into school. And then even, like, higher education, and that history really, like, is still, like, still reflects those numbers, right? That there's so few, like, Black people, there's so fewer Black women, there's fewer Black disabled women, fewer Black disabled queer women, like, just as you go along into, like, these different marginalizations, like, there's less people. So the way that I look at it, the entry of, like, whether you end up going to, like, an Ivy League is kind of determined the minute you're born. It's determined the minute you, like, get into, like, primary school, elementary school, whatever you call it, right? So to me, the problem is the education structure. It's like what we have been taught it means to excel, what we have been taught it means to have the capacity to solve problems, to have the capacity to, like, face certain things. And I completely understand, you know, if we're talking about, like, STEM and, like, other kind of sciences, that, you know, maybe you're bad at math, but, you know, are people bad at math, or are people bad at testing? Are people really bad at the way that like curriculums are structured? Are people really bad at understanding in these rigid ways that we're taught, right? And that also applies to like even humanities and everything. So if we kind of like deconstruct some of those barriers into the like system and even the ways that we are beaming, like what is an academically like, am I academically inclined? Like, what does it mean to be academically inclined? Do you know what I mean? Like, and have we not limited human beings? Have we not limited ourselves and each other if we're saying that, well, if you can't understand this in this particular way because you didn't learn it in this very rigid way, you know, this is the problem. Even if we're talking about like, you know, kids that are like neurodivergent, right? Like how often are they kind of like included in the ways that kind of like we're being taught about things and the ways that concepts and new things are presented to us? So for me, I just feel the whole system is broken. And until we can confront some of that, unless we can confront that, like, listen, this thing is rotten from the core, and we need to become more creative and we need to become more open-minded in a way that kind of really includes everyone and make sure that everyone has an equal opportunity, or even just kind of, we all have different learning abilities. We all have different like comprehension abilities. And yeah, I think if that's kind of deconstructed, that will also open up room for the kinds of people who are getting all the way to like master's, undergrad, PhD, because of course not everyone wants to do that, right? But if the system is open, then not only are like less people going to be put off by the system itself, but like there's going to be more creativity and more like nuance coming into the space itself. And for me, that's, you know, it seems like such a big ask, because who do you really tell that like the way Cambridge tests us in like history paper 2 is fucking weird? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know anyone who's like, if there's anyone who studied history, even like O-level, A-level history for Cambridge, there was like a paper 2 where they just give you like a bunch of like fucking paragraphs. And then like in the end, they're like, so what do you really think about this paragraph? Bro, like Hitler killed Jews, bro. Like, what do you want me to think about it? Like, and I scored like 50s for that my entire life. And I left high school still not understanding what was expected of me. And it's that, right? Yeah. That even like the attitude and the culture within academia is just very like, well, you fail, you're bad at this. Like, it's so strict, you know? And yeah. I really hate that. So for me, I would say that we need to transform the entire system to begin with. Like, we just, and I think that will change everything, because I think we'll pull on like a little piece of linen and that will kind of like unravel the entire cloth. So those are my thoughts.
There's also something you point to, right? So there's the structure of it in terms of what you've talked about, like who is in this space, the way, I guess, like the way people are tested and how it works. And then there's the other thing as well, which is just the actual structure of academia, which is, so for example, every time I try to explain to people what I do, people say, oh, you're a sociologist. The truth is I'm not. I have never taken a single sociology class in my entire life.
There's
certain people, apparently his name was C. Mills or something. See, academics will listen to me like, how do you not know him? So he was I don't know. But all I'm saying is, I do not know, like these structured ways of thinking, which is what is your discipline? And this is how you do your discipline, right? So if you are a scientist, and I think we can see this, especially with a lot of the problems now, because we have scientists that are just focusing on the science, but not the inequality of the science, the inequality of some of the inequality of their research or the impact that their research has, right? And they're just like, oh, but I'm just doing science. My job is in a lab doing science, but it feeds into other things. And I think that's the problem with academia, because we see it. Where else do we see it? Tech, right? People are like, this is all I know. This is all I study. This is what I create. This is what I make. I'm actually not interested in the impacts of this. That's somebody else's job potentially. But also because there's a hierarchy, those other people aren't considered as important or as, you know, as serious as the hard sciences. So I think academia is also very structured in the sense that it is way too linear, right? Or siloed.
Yeah.
But that's not how society works. That's not how knowledge actually works.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because why can't I talk to my biochem friends about like indigenous knowledge systems in like whatever, like I'll give an example of I know my friend is actually doing this work, so at least I'm not talking about my own work. Yeah. Desna, but you know, talking about like plant medicines and like whatever like components exist within plants, where they come from, whether or not we can find certain things within other plants to be useful in XYZ. That is like, you know, that works within certain societies and certain spaces. But this is work that you don't do just by being in a lab and grabbing plants and thingy thing, right? What happens if you work with other people, with people who have known this traditionally, etc.? How does that change? So it's that as well. So there's the access, there's the structures of testing, questioning, very important. But even once you're in academia to fix this, we need to remove the silos and the barriers between disciplines. Because I think disciplines are just an institution.
I think that's really important, actually. And I think I was thinking earlier, like, outside of like creating things and creating, naming and categorizing, academia also consolidates a lot of data, right? Like, because we know about the numbers, but it's people who are going in and doing like research and putting together these different metrics and blah, 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 who are literally counting these numbers. So what you're saying makes so much sense. And that, like, why is there no like more interdisciplinary stuff, right? Agreed. I don't know like what kind of short-term solutions that I have, because I guess the problem all the problems are just becoming like clearer and clearer and clearer to me every day. Because you could say, like, at the end of the day, like, the system of oppression is always going to have an excuse, right? So something that I was thinking about earlier was, someone told me something very interesting a while ago when we were talking about, you know, graduate schools and like applications. And you know how like graduate school applications are, you know, and I guess masters and PhD students are specifically selected by committees, right? And I was only maybe 2 years ago old when I learned that there is a very intentional way in which graduate classes and graduate students are selected, and the makeup of classes is very intentional. So for example, like, they're not going to put two radicals, you know, in this really amazing important class at Stanford. Maybe they'll put one a few a year, and that's why there's the token gay or the token lesbian, or, you know, like, do you get what I mean? And I literally like had no clue, and someone was like, no, like, I once sat in on like a session, and it's literally like, there's a quota, like, okay, off our class, we want like three policymakers to come out of here. Let's get one like for sure senator of the future in there. Let's get like maybe two people in some sciences. Let's get one little artsy creative in there, you know, for the vibes. And if we're gonna let any kind of like unhinged feminists in there, let's do one, because then they'll be alone. Do you know what I mean? So it's also like very intentional the way that these like groups of people and groups of professionals are kind of being molded by the system. And it just shows you like how intentional like the capitalist and like patriarchal agenda is, right? That even the people that are in power and in control, they can like anticipate almost the power that people have when they have both the knowledge and the experience and all of these different like skills that will then come together to like make change, you know what I mean? And they have to control even that.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I meant, right? Like, who knows, if I had applied the year before, I probably wouldn't have gotten in on the same project or the year after. It's that intentional thing, which, by the not as in, I obviously didn't know, because I just applied the year I applied. Yeah. Because that's the year I wanted.
Yeah.
It definitely is that. It's not, you know, and I think the sad part is a lot of people then think, oh, I'm not smart enough because I didn't get in. This and that. When a lot of the things are actually, in fact, have nothing to do with.
Yeah. At the end of the day, there's just not enough room for us. And because of that limited space, there's also a lot of like focus and like, okay, so who are the people that we're going to let into this space? And then you kind of like, okay, so who's the token? And then you're.
And so I think that's why they should. You can with that space, but in a,
even when I think about my class, one queer person in a class that's about sexual reproductive health rights in Africa, Do you know what I mean? Like, whether it was like intentional or neglect, it all kind of still points back to like the power of the system and like the far reaching like impact of this exclusion or this rigid.
Actually, the other thing, to go back to another one of the questions, which is its disadvantages or its limitations, it is not real. It's not, that's not real life. And I don't know, I hate to break this to academics, my fellow academics, academia is not real life. Of course, there's nuance in what I'm saying, right? But I'm just saying the certain ways in which we hold ourselves is as if, using we very loosely here, you know, as if that is it. It's not real life. Academia is not real. It's part, very small part of what reality is. So I think we need to humble ourselves, not just a little bit, but a whole
lot. Yeah, I mean, the fact that we have,
please don't start. You've seen my tweets on this. This just sends me
the African experts, honey, the professional academics, the African experts who get all the gigs on BBC and explain why our elections are so barbaric, but they were so shh when white people, what was it, January 6th, when the January 6ths were breaking into the, was it the Capitol?
And actually, we see it right now, right?
Right?
How many people would tweet about decolonization day in, day out? How many people wrote papers, attended conferences about decolonization? And then when we're witnessing what's happening in Palestine now, where are you all? And why is that suddenly such an extreme thing to talk about?
Right. Right.
It was fun. We're talking about a curriculum, or you thought it was fun,
mm-hmm.
right? But it was a small part of actual realities. And that's the thing with academia. That's what I mean by we need to understand that we are a part of reality. We can't just be talking or saying things if we cannot stand for anything in real life.
Yeah, real. Agreed.
Sorry. But that's it. That's my rant for the day. I think I've milked my quota ranting, so I'm done.
Amazing. Well, you know, sometimes you have these conversations and you even ask yourself, man, like, why am I doing this? You know what I mean? You're like, so why am I in this? Like an entire existential thing right now, like, oh my god, like, am I a part of the problem for like participating in this? At the same time, like, you know, I don't want to, we all have our different reasons for getting into academia, which I think for a lot of us are even about trying to get some of that like extra respect or that extra, like, if a chair becomes available at the table, you want someone to be like, oh, like, okay, come, and hopefully that will make some change for our communities. But otherwise,
and those are valid reasons, right? I mean,
yeah,
to go back to what I said, I just remember now what I said in the other episode I was in on this show, which is, I think it is, we need to understand that it's a privilege to be able to not choose to access certain things, and unfortunately some of us don't have that privilege. So I don't think we are naive enough, once again using me very loosely here, I don't think we're naive enough to say, oh, because I, as Lutendo, am in academia, I am going to change them. I don't think that. I'm not changing my institution that's been there since 12-something. I'm not changing.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that the work that I do and the way that I do my work shows a little bit of some of those cracks, some of those limitations, and somebody else can build upon it. It is those small bricks, and it is also understanding that the system in which we work, how do we get to be part of the conversations we actually want to be part of? It is by getting these credentials.
Yeah.
So I don't think we should be too hard on ourselves for partaking, because otherwise we're going to be too hard on ourselves for other things, such as partaking of neoliberal capitalism, which, by the way, you have no choice but to, right?
Real.
Sadly.
Yeah.
Sadly. Like, we would love, you know, of course we're hoping that the work we do breaks it down bit by bit, but it's not going to happen.
Well, Well, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for your time.
Pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for being a repeat guest. We love that. We love consistency. Yeah, and thank you to everybody else who tuned in. This has been a good episode. I'm still reflecting. So yeah, that is the end of the episode, and I'll catch you next time.